Hello, and welcome to another virtual author chat at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and today the Poison Pen is delighted to have with us virtually author Pamela Yuen, whose new book is Emmeline.
Emelian.
Emmeline. I'm going to let Pamela pronounce the book from now on.
You can call her Emmy if you want.
Emmy, I like that. Thank
Yeah,
you.
that's easy.
The Poison Pen does have copies of Pamela's new book, and we would be happy to hold one for you or put one in the mail. Just give us a call at the Poison Pen or go online, and we can connect you with this really wonderful historical novel. And now I'd like to welcome Pamela.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I was just talking to you about this, but I'd like to say again that I really appreciate your independent bookstores like yours. I don't know what authors would do without you.
Well, that's very sweet of you. We don't know what we'd do without authors like you. Let's start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself, because if I understand correctly, you did not plan on becoming a writer. You had another career path.
That's exactly right. Yes, I was a lawyer. Just to back up a little bit, when I was went off to college, when I graduated from high school, which was a long, long time ago, and went off to college for 1 year. It's a girls' college. And I played around and played around. I didn't do anything. I went to PE class in my pajamas with a bathrobe over it every morning. And then I'd go back to bed, after she called the roll. So I flunked just about everything. And the dean said, "You are not college material." So for about 7 or 8 years, I just got had every kind of job, survival kind of jobs, And finally, I had a son. I was married. I had a son, and I ended up having to raise him by myself. He's a wonderful, wonderful kid, guy, man now. But so I thought, okay, what can I do? I can't do math. I'm terrible at math. What can I do to make a lot of money and help raise a child all by myself? And I thought, I'll be a lawyer. So I worked at Tulane Law School, was able to get classes free because of that, got my undergraduate degree that way. Then I went to law school and became a lawyer, worked with the law firm of Baker Botts in Houston, Texas. It's actually an international firm. Houston is the base, and just loved it. I had a career for about 25 years practicing law, and really, I think I'm the only lawyer in the world that really liked practicing law.
That's great. And it must have been gratifying on some level to think that that instructor that told you you weren't college material turned out to be wrong.
Right. Good, thank goodness.
What prompted you to decide, now I want to write a book? What was your initial path to publication like?
Well, initially, my path was that I wanted to find out some information. And I started researching a book to write a book because I wanted to find out the information. And as I wrote the book, I thought, this is really interesting. I'm enjoying this. That was a nonfiction book. So after that, I thought I would try my hand at something else, and I went further. And I've always loved history. So I started with some smaller books that, of course, you possibly could call them historical fiction, but they really weren't. But that's how I learned to write. I learned to write by not only writing, even and sticking with it, no matter how bad it looked, but also by reading, because everything, you can't write unless you read a lot. You have to read, and you have to read with an eye of, how does this author do this? Why did this author do this? And you learn. For instance, on point of view, I was reading Tolstoy, and well, it was actually War and Peace, if you can believe it. I'm probably the only person in the whole world that read the whole book. But so there's a scene in Tolstoy, and the man is standing at a forest, and he has this little dog next to him, and he's going to go hunting, and the forest is in front of him. And he says to the dog, whatever the dog's name is, "What do you think we should do?" or something like that. And Tolstoy jumps over from the thoughts of the man into the thoughts of the dog, which is really, and that's the only time he did it that I can think of in the book. And the little dog says, well, what does he expect me to do? And I just thought, isn't that great? Maybe it's against the rules, but isn't that great? And so you can learn things like that from every writer, every writer, a good writer, bad writer, it doesn't matter. You can learn from them. And so I started writing and I taught myself how to write that way. And my first book that was really, I think, a serious book was The Moon and the Mango Tree. And that is a story of my grandmother's life in the 1920s.
Oh.
And I think throughout all of my books, there's a running theme of women wanting more, and particularly in the early part of the 19th century. And one of the reasons I think I'm so interested in it is because women today have everything. I mean, we can do anything. We have astronauts that are women. We can do anything. And yet women today, I don't know if they really, unless they read a lot, I doubt that they really understand how they got to this place from, say, 100 years ago, when women had, a woman married a man and everything she owned became his, things like that. I don't know, unless you read, you don't know those things. And so I was really fascinated with progress of women, and particularly in the early days, in the 1920s, 1930s.
You're right. It's been a constant struggle for women, and it's sometimes been two steps forward and one step back. But sure, you're right. Even today, with all the advancements, it wasn't that long ago. I remember back in the 70s when women couldn't have a credit card in their name. They had to have a man.
I could not get a credit card. I could not. In fact, when I was raising my child and working and going to school at the same time, and moved into an apartment, and so went downtown to get all the electricity hooked up. And they said, I'm sorry, you have to have your father or your husband or your brother. And women today, and that wasn't, you know, that's not like it was the 18th century.
No, some of us were still around back then.
Yeah, right.
What can you tell us about your new book? And I'm going to call it Emmy.
Okay. I was interested in Amelia, and I got interested in her, excuse me, I'm a little bit hoarse today.
That's okay.
I became interested in Amelia when I was writing The Queen of Paris, because Amelia and Coco were friends, and Amelia was almost a mentor to Coco. She was about 15 years older than Coco. And so I really was interested in that relationship. And in The Queen of Paris, when Coco has her son, André, Emilienne is right there to help her and help her birth the baby. So they had a very close relationship, even though they were very different. And so when I wrote about Coco and The Queen of Paris, and she was so powerful. I mean, in her inside, she was so powerful. She was so... knew what she wanted, and she was going to get it, and she had a plan for life, and that was it, and don't talk to her about anything else. Even if she got in trouble sometimes, she always figured a way out. Emilienne is sort of the opposite. She's sort of, she was known for her joie de vivre in real life, and she loved children, and she was very gentle, and just sort of the opposite of Coco. So I became interested in Emilienne when I was writing The Queen of Paris. And I thought, and the most interesting thing to me about those two women was how they chose to deal with hardships in life. Coco chose work. Coco said, okay, I have a problem. I'm poor. I don't want to be poor. And she figured out what to do, and she had a plan, and she followed it. And by the way, Emilienne helped her with that. In The Queen of Paris, when Coco says, I have a plan and this is what I want to do, I'm going to make hats. And then after she made hats, she made dresses and perfume and all of this other stuff. But Emilienne was right there saying, go for it, go for it. But Emilienne, on the other hand, instead of depending on her abilities and her go for it, that, you know, go for it and get it, Emilienne was sort of dreamy and sort of wispy. And she took the opposite path, depending on beauty, which is a very fragile thing to depend on, beauty and youth. And the two women took opposite paths. As good friends as they were so opposite. And that fascinated me. Not much is known about, was known about Emilienne. Proust wrote a little bit about her. Oscar Wilde hated her and wrote a little bit about her. But the only biography I could find, John, was in French, and it was old French. Oh. We were talking about French before, and I was telling you how bad I am in French. So I found an assistant in France, and there was only one biography that we could find, and in written about around that time of period where you could really count on what you were reading. On it. Mm-hmm. And she translated it word for word for me in French. Hmm. So it wasn't on the computer, so it couldn't be, you know, just zoop translate for me.
Yeah.
So I'd get 5 pages every Friday, I guess, for about a year. And that's how we proceeded with Emilienne.
Now, Emmy was a courtesan, if I am correct, which is sometimes mistaken for being the same thing as a mistress, but they were actually very different. Can you kind of, for those that might not be familiar with the roles that those courtesans played, what exactly were they? What did they do?
Courtesan was a unique character up until about World War I. When World War I started, that was the end of courtesans. But before that, a courtesan was a very beautiful woman. Within a reasonable couple of years, she was also a very wealthy woman. A married man would fall in love with a courtesan and feel comfortable taking her out on the town on his arm, and he'd be proud of having this beautiful butterfly with him. Mm-hmm. And he'd show her off and go all over Paris. Maxime's was really initially a place where only the courtesans and their lovers went. And so a courtesan was not a mistress, because a mistress was sort of hidden away from the wife and the wife's family. And it was a sort of a secret relationship. Courtesan was a very public relationship, and wives, for the most part, seemed to accept it because it was just part of life, you know. So there's a very big difference. And as I said, after World War I, that ended. Women shortened their skirts and went to work and got their own lives going. They didn't have to depend 100% on a relationship like that with men.
I think in some ways, just from what I've read about their role, while it might be misconstrued, it's actually for some women a very smart business decision. Because if that was the option you were going to take, at least you kind of controlled your own destiny in a sense.
Yes, because a man would fall in love with a courtesan and he would buy her house and he would set her up for life, and they'd actually have lawyers and they'd sign agreements sometimes so that he was legally required to support this woman for the rest of her life. And the money would be put up in trust for her and she would be taken care of. So it was very, very different from just what you think of as the back street.
Mm-hmm. And some of them actually had very influential roles culturally too, because I think Emmy was one of the Three Graces. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, the Three Graces, Caroline, Arturo, and I made a note of that because I never can remember. Leanne de Puy, Bougy, Caroline Arturo, and Amélion de Lanson were the three graces. They were named that, and that was sort of a thing in Paris, that these were the three graces. And they were very powerful and wealthy. Had a lot of they also had political clout.
Now, this was the Belle Epoque period in France, which I think was kind of similar to the Edwardian period in England, maybe.
Was following. It was from about 1870 to World War I, which is 1914. It was a very unique period of time. The wars, Napoleon's wars were over. All of the wars in Europe had sort of just calmed down and withered away. And you had this period of about 45 years with no wars and a lot of excess, a lot of parties and happy times, sad times for a lot of people too. But in the case of a woman like Amélion or Coco, that there was a lot of opportunity. And it was a very unique period because if you think about it, and you go back to World War I, and then when World War I is over, women had been working in factories, you know, and now they're working hard and they don't have that luxurious life that you could get if you were a terrifically beautiful courtesan. So it was almost like the butterflies died.
Oh, that's interesting. You mentioned some of the research that you had done about Emmy. From all that you've learned about her, what surprised you the most about her as a person?
What surprised me the most?
Yeah, most.
I think her will to survive. I'm working on a new book now, and Amélion is in it. And one of the things that I found after I finished writing Amélion and went on further, I found that she really was extremely successful. She became very wealthy. She lived with her friends. Leanne was her lover and her best friend, although she also was with men. But she made a lot of money, lived on the Riviera, and died happy, I think. I think she had a happy life. But what you asked a question, I rambled off, and what was your question?
Oh, no, I think you answered it. What surprised you the most? And you said it was her resilience, her will to live, I guess.
Resilience and also her joy de vivre. She seemed to really love life.
That's interesting.
Coco wasn't like that. Coco was, you know, I'm going to tromp through this life however I have to tromp through it. But Amélion wasn't like that. She was softer.
And it's interesting because that kind of, when you're talking about Emmy, that allows us to look back at your book before, The Queen of Paris, which was about Coco. And you kind of give readers, some readers anyway, a different perception, a different picture of Coco Chanel.
Yes, she Coco Chanel, I always thought of her as this cute little French girl that made perfume and made beautiful clothes. And as she got older, she was very elegant, you know, and happy. And I imagine my surprise when I found out what she was really like. A book came out called Sleeping with the Enemy. Are you familiar with that book?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was just a jaw dropper. Mm-hmm. That's the first time that I'd ever, not only had I read the real story, it was nonfiction, mm-hmm. the real factual story of Coco during World War II. But it also was just so completely different from anything we'd ever heard, you know? I think people knew that she was a collaborator, mm-hmm. and she lived in the Hotel Ritz conveniently at the same time the Gestapo was living in the Hotel Ritz, but nobody really talked about it that much. And in fact, it's very interesting. I saw something came out, and I think it was the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago, that Chanel is going to have some sort of reveal on documents and things, you know, coming to the edge now and saying, okay, there's a little bit more to Coco than we've all thought, you know. So I hope they'll all read The Queen of Paris too.
Oh yeah, it's a fabulous book, and you're right. Coco Chanel may not be a person that you like, whether historically or as a character, but in some cases you have to admire her determination. I mean, she just, it was a difficult time and she did things that maybe were not laudable, but she was gonna see her own ship on its course.
That's right. And I hoped that I got that across, because I did not want to make her look like just someone that was very casually doing all these things. She had reasons, and it took me a while to really get my mind into that exactly, you know. Okay, yes, she was working with the Gestapo, but why was she? The whole question for me in The Queen of Paris was why.
That's true. Yeah, no, you do a wonderful job at kind of illuminating that side of her character. You've talked a little bit about your fascination with history, but why, as a writer, do you find historical fiction as such a rich source of inspiration? And how do you, as an author, walk the line when you're writing a historical novel between incorporating facts and telling a story? Because you can't put everything in, otherwise it's a textbook, but you also have to be true.
Boy, that's the truth. And I have to, I made a decision early on. For instance, in Emilienne, she had a father who was a rat, you know, and there was a lot going on there. There were a lot of other things that were going on. So I think you kind of have to pick and choose the things that make that character, that made that character who she is. I really like writing about difficult women. You know, I started thinking that way when I read Gone with the Wind, which I guess is off the shelves now, but at any rate, Scarlett O'Hara was so unlikable, but so interesting. Mm-hmm. And so I read the book from that point of view. How did the writer get everybody so intrigued with this woman who was really not the kind of person you'd want to be friends with? Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting, because there was one scene, Scarlett O'Hara is walking into the ballroom, and she really didn't know what to do. And it was just so interesting to think, what would a beautiful woman who flirts all the time, what would she do? What does she do? She causes a scene. She steals other women's partners in the dance and things like that. So those kind of things really intrigued me.
That's a very interesting analogy. If you set aside all the issues with Gone with the Wind and Margaret Mitchell, just looking at Scarlett O'Hara, you're right. She is not someone that you would maybe want as your best friend or something, but she did what she had to do to survive. And if she didn't do it, her family probably would have gone down the drain after
that. Right. And she would have gone with them.
Yeah, so
I know it's fascinating to think about things like that. The strength of some of those women and the things they had to go through. Yeah. And The Moon and the Mango Tree, the story I talked about of my grandmother's life. My grandmother was beautiful, and she was trained to sing grand opera. And she lived in about 1918. My grandfather and she had married, and my grandfather was a doctor. And so World War I came along, and he ended up in France and operating on, you know, in France with no anesthesia. And it was just a terrible experience. And he came home. My beautiful butterfly grandmother wanted to sing grand opera, and she'd been taking lessons, and she had a beautiful voice. And she and my grandfather came home, and he said, "Barbara, I don't want to just be a society doctor. I've seen what happens when people need doctors. We're going to go to Siam, which is now Thailand." And she said, what? I want to sing. I want to be here. I want to do this. This is 1918, something like that. Mm-hmm. And so she went to my great grandmother and she said, she was crying. She said, "What do? I want to sing. They're going to give me a contract. I could sing on stage." And my great grandmother said, "Oh, Barbara, grow up. This is your husband. You follow your husband." And that's the way it was. And she did until she couldn't take it anymore.
That's amazing. And that's actually a good segue, because if I understand correctly, there's going to be a new edition of The Moon and the Mango Tree coming.
Yes, with a beautiful new cover. Yes. Yes. Yes, that book was really fun to write because I had all my grandmother's letters home, and she was very close to her father, and so I had his letters. I don't like books where it's just letters, mm-hmm. so I didn't do that. But it gave me all this insight into what she had gone through and what the family had gone through and what it was like, you know. But Siam, which is now Thailand, was wild jungles in those days. Mm-hmm. And she was a party girl, and she didn't want to be a missionary wife. And the missionaries didn't like her either.
No, it was probably not a good match all the way around.
She scampered off to Europe. So
you have been writing for a while now, and you've probably gained a lot of insight. What do you know as an author right now that you wish you could go back in time and tell yourself when you were first starting out? What advice would you give yourself?
Oh, boy. That's a hard question. I don't know. I don't know that I would do anything differently. I mean, I guess a lot of people would say, well, I wouldn't have spent all that time being a lawyer. I'd start writing earlier. Mm-hmm. But I don't see it that way, because I think I'm the only person in the world that loved practicing law. I may have said that before, but I really did. It was wonderful. And I learned a lot, and I learned wordsmithing, and I learned to research. And so I had a lot of tools when I decided that I was going to write. I had a lot of tools.
That's great. You mentioned a little bit, and this is up to you, about what you're working on. Do you want to tell us about what's next for you as an author?
I can tell you a little bit. Just okay. It's set on the Riviera.
Ooh.
French Riviera, 1939. Coco's in it. Emilienne's in it. And Daisy Fellows, the wickedest woman in the world, is in it. And boy, you talk about a difficult character. Mm-hmm. Daisy Fellows was. You sound like you know who she is.
Uh-huh, a little bit.
Yeah. But for people that don't know, she was one of the richest women in the world. She inherited the Singer sewing machine fortune. And she just hated everybody. And she had all this money and all this power. And she went about just sort of being mean. That was her, you know, that's what she did. She was a wicked, wicked woman. So it's fun to write about. It's a little bit difficult.
It's, she's a complicated character, which you seem drawn to. Yeah, there was a fascinating Smithsonian, I think, show about all these different women, and they focused on her at one point. And
she would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah, she was really interesting. How can readers learn more about your books? Do you have a website? Are you on social?
I do. Thank you for asking. It's Pamela at PamelaEwen.com. E-W-E-N.
That's great.
Yes.
I can't believe we've already gone by our allotted time. It's just
I know. I've enjoyed it so much, and thank you for having me.
Thank you. We've been fortunate to have with us author Pamela Ewen, whose new book is Emmy, and I'll let her tell you the full title.
Emilienne.
There you go. Somewhere my French teacher is probably rolling over in a grave, but we will have that.
So is mine. Don't worry.
Thank you
so much. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you. And for those tuning in, thank you for listening to another recorded author chat with The Poison Pen. We look forward to seeing you virtually next time. Thank you, Pamela.
Bye-bye.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.